Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the Habitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Favette, the Tilt Thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
Hey, are you ready for this one?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right, Bob's your uncle. Oh, there we go.
Oh, that's it.
That was
such a graceful introduction.
Did you see how I did that?
I didn't see it coming.
Take notes. Bob's your uncle is our proverb this time. Now, I don't think a lot of people that are in our, local listening audience are using this very often, although we do have an international following. So it's quite popular in Commonwealth countries of the UK.
Commonwealth.
Bob's your uncle. This means you're all set, or hey, you've got it made.
Piece of cake.
There you have it. A French version would be perhaps et voilà.
C'est complet.
Wait. So where did this come from? Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story, and I'll tell you up front, they suspect this is not the actual story, but I like the story.
Oh, yeah. So, I think I found the story too. I like it a lot.
I think so too. So 1887, a prime minister in the UK, Prime Minister Robert, parentheses, Bob, Gascoigne Cecil. He was the third Marquis of Salisbury, and he famously.
Oh, this is awesome.
You don't like how I pronounce Salisbury.
I'm trying really hard to not. I lived in England, so I'm very inclined to a proper pronunciation, but it's even more hilarious
Thank
when
you.
It's not. So please
Thank
proceed.
You. He appointed his nephew. Do you like how I pronounce nephew?
Nephew.
You like how I did
that?
I do
like that.
Okay, he appointed his nephew, Arthur Balfour, as the chief secretary of Ireland for those who are more native. And this was a case of nepotism.
Rampant
nepotism. He appointed his nephew. The suspicion was Bob's your uncle. Basically, you're all set because, you know, Uncle Bob he's taking care of you. So Bob's your uncle.
Like, it's not that he was qualified for the position.
He was just the
nephew. Bob's your uncle. You are now the chief secretary of Ireland.
Oh, there you go. You're welcome. Don't need to.
Good show, man.
Good show. Thank you, Uncle Bobby.
Cracking good. That's cracking good. Arthur. thank you, Uncle Robert Gascoigne Cecil, Marquess of Salisbury.
Salisbury. So,
could I have a steak? Sorry.
Now, the reason why I did preface this saying that there is a feeling out there that this may not be accurate is because this Bob's your uncle didn't show up in print anywhere until the first time in 1924. So almost 35 years later, after this appointment, it was found written. But you know what? I don't care. I like the story, and I like Bob's your uncle means you got somebody that's going to take care of you.
Yeah. How would you use that in a sentence?
Bob's your uncle?
Yeah.
You know, when I took my Montessori training, we had an Australian trainer. That was actually the first time I heard it, like, you know, in the flesh with somebody. And he would, you know, finish up a training or a lecture and he'd be like, there you go, Bob's your uncle. And we were like, what? That's hilarious. Who's your uncle? Bob's your uncle. That's my experience with it. What about you, Pete?
You know, it's funny because I never had taken the time to really actually even know the meaning of this phrase before this, which is funny since I did live in England. I don't think it's something that's said too terribly often, at least maybe not among the fancy class of people that I
associated with.
Yes.
All the marquees.
But I'm going to start saying this now. I think it's hilarious, you know, and I've finished up. Like, oh, Bob's your uncle. All set now. I think it's funny. But it did remind me of this other phrase that I'd heard, which is, how's your father? A little bit. How's your father? You heard that? So no. Austin Powers, he says, but it's, it, if you're going to have a bit of how's your father, fancy a bit of how's your father, it means do you want to have sex?
Apparently. Oh, how's like, your father? Yeah, means do you want to have sex? Mm-hmm.
Go have a bit of how's your father? I do not know.
My father's great. And then you're like, what, are we weirdly, really talking about my father?
What is it
really
called? That complex Oedipus? Is this like a bit a little Oedipal, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's with the father. Mother, but.
No, there's another one. There's another Greek word for the opposite.
For the father?
Yeah, yeah.
Listener out there, please send that in.
We'll put a special mention on the Proverbichon.
And we'll get him some kickbacks.
Bob's your uncle, how's your father? Not the same, but still relations.
And there's also-
Carnal relations.
Fanny's your aunt.
Oh, that's the thing I wanted to talk about.
Fanny's your aunt. Yeah.
Because, the longer version of the saying, right, is Bob's your father, Fanny's your aunt, right?
Yeah.
Or Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of this other thing. I'm trying to find in my notes here. We don't say that in this country because Fanny, what does Fanny mean?
Connotation in your buttocks.
It means your bum, right? It means your butt. But that's funny because that only occurred kind of late in the 20th century that it got shortened to this Bob's your uncle instead of Bob's your uncle and Fanny's your granny.
Fanny's your granny.
Isn't that what it is?
Fanny's your aunt.
No, Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your granny.
Oh, I got Fanny's your aunt, but you got Fanny's your
granny.
It's
way funny, way better. Fanny's your granny.
Okay, it's better, I'm going somewhere here. Okay, go for it.
So in the US, of course, as you said, Fanny means bum, your butt, right? In the UK, it means vagina. Imagine my embarrassment when I was a little kid in high school. I was talking about do you like my fanny pack? Or
don't touch my fanny.
I'm going to spank you on the fanny or whatever. Like it's absolutely, I've talked about before about gaffes that I made when I was in high school in England, but this is another one. Like you have to know your slang before you start going there because fanny in England is unequivocal. It means vagina, not butt.
Vagina.
Yeah. And there's also in England, if you just say someone's, at least when I was there as a teenager, if you say someone was horny, it doesn't mean like what we would think like sexually, like
Randy.
So horny means attractive. Like that girl's really horny means that she's good looking in that set. And if you say, you have to say that Randy to mean what we mean by horny.
Uh-huh.
You know? Uh-huh. So
if your name's Fanny or Randy
or
vagina, you've got problems.
Yeah, I know. And vagina, you've got problems both sides of the Atlantic.
Oh, both sides. But, it means.
Well, in England, vagina means a popcorn ball. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Obviously that's not right.
All right.
Just taking liberties with the truth there, but yeah. Good stuff.
Okay. So, all right. So
and Bob's uncle, I'll finish that. Alienated everyone, both sides of the pond, as it were.
And Bob means to Bob for apples, and that's disgusting, as we all know.
I can't even believe people even do that. Like, even when my kids were little and we go to a Halloween party and be like, let's go Bob for apples. I'm like, these kids are like putting their whole nasal cavities in there. It's like, let's commingle all of the phlegm from every child in. Also, it's really hard to like your nose.
It's like a little waterboarding and kid style. I don't know.
Hate that bottom for apple stuff.
My brain went to this whole idea of nepotism. I mean, there's lots to think
that's
about.
Interesting
with that.
Question.
I was looking up, I think famously Bill Gates talked about what he was going to leave for inheritance and how he's going to involve his kids, with obviously the billions that they have.
Oh my God, my dad was like the exact opposite. I'm not leaving anything to you guys. So,
well, no, that's what Bill Gates said.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Now I wanted to look if that was true or not. And so it kind of got me on a little bit of a rabbit hole where I found a website where it listed billionaires that would not be leaving vast amounts of fortunes to their children. They're still going to leave some millions.
For them, a vast fortune, a tiny drop is $50 million.
Just a few million. Well, it's true. So so Warren Buffett is quoted as saying he's 100.8 billion dollars. Mm-hmm. This is his fortune, probably bigger than that by now. But this is a quote. I'm going to give just enough that they would feel they can do anything, but not so much that they would feel like doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. I respect Warren Buffett.
Yeah. He's got some sage advice on a lot of different topics, including child rearing.
Yeah. Look and I like that. The way he serves food. It's like, you can just take whatever you want.
You just line up, you got your plate.
Yeah,
you
I like to go to Warren Buffett. More. Yeah, all you can eat, Warren Buffett. Yeah,
me too. the popcorn and the popcorn shrimp.
popcorn ball. Don't say popcorn ball. It means vagina.
It means vagina. And you don't want to go up for seconds at Warren How's Buffett's vagina.
Never. How's your father? Oh, God.
How's your uncle? So, you know, and as I looked at this website, actually, so they got Ted Turner, Reed Hastings, Reed Hastings being the Netflix guy, George Lucas, Lorene Powell Jobs, so Stephen Jobs' widow. This website was showing those that have done the Giving Pledge, and this is an official thing. The Giving Pledge says that I am a billionaire and I'm going to give 90% plus of my wealth to charity when I die. Mm-hmm. So,
or else what?
Or else you can we'll say liar, liar, we'll pants on fire, oh, nose as long as a telephone wire. And you wouldn't want that to be your legacy.
No, no one would
so
want that.
So Warren Buffett has pledged to give 99% to charity.
Cool.
We'll see if he's got his nose as long as a telephone wire.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
No, I think that's admirable for sure. You know, to make that pledge.
It's published, Pete. It must be totally true.
Totally non-enforceable.
I mean, what it comes
still,
to-
it's a great impulse. It's correct. I think, you know.
What comes to you when you think about this?
Well, I was thinking about nepotism, thinking about, is it good or is it bad? Because like for some people, it's a knee jerk that it's a negative thing that you just like give some preferential treatment to a relative or something like that. And that is true because it can mean passing over people who might be more qualified to do whatever job or to receive whatever benefit. But then on the other hand, it does, you know, if you have nepotism is a great way to inculcate trust, you know?
Trust among
you can theoretically you can trust family members more than you trust people who aren't your family.
Trust among you,
But this led me to this really interesting thing that where the term nepotism even comes from.
Oh yeah.
And
Neptune.
Close.
Okay.
But not. Same universe.
Okay, so within our solar system.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Pete, for making me feel right.
It came from. This is totally not fact checked, but I found a website that said that the term nepotism comes from Catholic bishops who would bequeath wealth, property, and priesthood to their, quote, nephews, who are typically their illegitimate offspring.
The nephews.
Yeah.
Little did I know.
The nephews.
Yeah.
And that way they could, you know, these priests who were not supposed to be having children or engage, you know, doing any of that, how's your father, having, you know, being able to retain power and property and things which they were supposed to have forsworn when they joined their particular vocation.
They gave it to somebody else and could then still indulge and enjoy. That's so interesting. Nepotism, nephew. That's the nephew.
Nephutism.
Arthur Balfour. Nephutism.
That's what we're going to start calling it that.
Nepotism. If we really want to make this,
That's the thing. If your uncle names your child, they're always going to name him Denise.
Denise.
Yeah. And then if you have a son, they'll name him the nephew.
The nephew.
The nephew. All righty. Welcome to the second part of our episode here in which we make up lies and tell tales, tall tales. Everything that you're going to hear from now on is made up on the spot by me and Lisa. We're going to share a random word that we got from one of our listeners / the Proverbatron, which we'll talk about. And then we're going to make up a cool saying from scratch. Okay. So I'm going to lean over here to this. Oh my gosh, look at how beautiful it is. It's gold encrusted and jewels.
And look at, you see the Boardman Review. They just put a placard right on here really because cool as they should.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, this part of the episode is as usual brought to you by the Boardman Review, but this time it's also brought to you in part by my uncle, who is the one who encrusted the Proverbatron with gold and jewels here for us today. It's really kind of,
you know, I meant to tell you, you and your uncle look a lot alike and like even your voices are similar.
We're very close.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I have to say on that subject.
All right. Thank you,
Uncle Bob.
Okay. Uncle Bob. You seem a little bit defensive, but I was just noticing. It was a compliment. Your uncle's a good looking guy. I wouldn't mind having some time with him.
A little how's your father, maybe? Anyway, I'm going to press this. There's actually a ruby right here on the button. I'm going to press this button to get the first word. So.
Intestine.
Oh, hey, the first word. Ooh. First word is intestine. Intestine.
All right. Let me hit this diamond button here.
Ostrich.
The second word is ostrich. Ostrich.
Ostrich. Nice. All right. We have intestine and ostrich. And this one comes from Down Under.
Down Under.
Yeah. Now I'm going to slaughter my Australian accent.
Yeah. I'm ready.
You want to hear it? Right. So this phrase, is struth. That'll stick better than an ostrich intestine.
Struth. I like struth.
Struth.
I only know struth from this proverb.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's now commonly said in Australia, but mm-hmm. it is one which is, yeah, I think it's one down under when mm-hmm. It's almost always paired with this phrase. That'll stick better than an ostrich intestine.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they follow it up with fair dinkum.
They do?
Yeah. Fair dinkum. Fair dinkum means that it's for real. And they both mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Struth and fair dinkum both mean like, this is true.
Right.
Struth. I think it comes from it's the truth.
It's the truth. Mm-hmm. Struth. Research showed me it is also derivative from sleuth because there's a lot of detective type
You could study this all you want yeah. and you'll find out that it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll stick better than an ostrich intestine. Sorry, all my Australian friends out there. What's weird about this, right, is that ostrich intestines are like super slippery.
I looked up the ranking of slippery intestines. Mm-hmm. Humans, of course, have the least slippery intestines.
Sticky as hell. Ours are.
Yeah, they're sticky. Yeah. Yeah. If last time I could not get that human intestine off. Like I had flinging my fingers I couldn't get it off. Mm-hmm. I had to get some turpentine to get the intestines off my fingers.
Yeah. Right. But like not.
No. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was the least slippery, mm-hmm. most slippery, as we just said, ostrich. Do you know what the right under ostrich slippery intestine is?
No.
The jellyfish. Yeah, you probably didn't even know they have intestines.
No, I didn't. Yeah.
They have intestines, very slippery. But if you can imagine jellyfish intestine, you can imagine that's slippery.
Yeah.
Ostrich, even more.
Yeah. So it's really remarkable. And in fact, it's why Australia is a leader in lubricants in the world. It's
yes.
one of their industry really began
yes.
with extracting this lubricant from the ostrich. Incredibly, it like zeroes out friction almost entirely.
Yeah. And now the extraction of this lubricant, you don't need to kill the ostrich. I think we need to tell our audience that.
You just have to squeeze it.
You squeeze it. You do a just an ever so slight, like a turkey baster type, right where the
business end of the ostrich, as it were.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got to grab by the neck.
Mm-hmm.
You got to hold up. Actually, they have to lift up by the neck and they kind of like, you know how when
the,
you're
the
like
straw,
yeah, you're like kind of squeezing thing yeah. out of a tube. You squeeze the neck. It's really weird. If you squeeze the neck and then it comes out
right into the business end. Baster. And something they also said that helps with that is if you whisper sweet nothings in the ostrich's ear while you do that. Hmm. And I was looking up some phrases that you need to say to ostriches that will really listen.
There's like a whole phrase book for that?
Yeah. So this is one thing is your tail feathers are on fire.
They
like that.
That's weird.
Because they're feeling some burning in the back and you want to just be like, but you're saying it like, they're on fire.
It's no big deal.
But you're fine. Mm. Yeah. And your legs aren't that long because they're a little bit self-conscious about their legs. Oh, yeah. So your legs aren't that long.
Yeah.
Like that.
So that's amazing that the ostriches would have such a high level.
And then the lubricant comes out.
Yeah. I never would have thought that they would, almost as smart as a chimango ostriches might be.
The two smartest birds.
Right. And you both Antipodean, as it were, in the Southern Hemisphere. I think that's the right word.
I think is the emphasis is on Antipodean, but I don't like to correct you, Pete.
No. And did you look up all the uses that they have for this, the lubricant that they get?
I got some down here. Yeah. What did you find?
Well, it was, they use it on a lot of their, weaponry and stuff like that. And on mm-hmm. like battleships, they coat the bottom. That's why Australian battleships are always the fastest. Mm-hmm. You know, and even, you know, you can put it on, it's really expensive though. So usually it's really the military that uses it, but like airplanes, any kind of vehicle, mm-hmm. anything you put, smear this stuff on or, mm-hmm.
Or like slime.
Yeah. And so, the SEALs, like Australian, the Navy, they do a lot of like, stealth, like kind of undercover work in Australian divers.
They
smear themselves
in that.
They can swim super fast.
Yeah.
And, they can just undetected. They just slip their way in different,
And they need it. And like, besides the military having a huge budget to be able to afford this, of course, the crocodile industry. So crocodile wrestling is huge there. And you really want to be slippery when you're wrestling those crocodiles.
Yeah.
Brings in millions and not billions industry of crocodile wrestling.
Yeah.
And so you want that ostrich intestine slime on you.
Yeah.
To get, you know, to really wrestle the crocodile.
Yeah, sure. Anytime you need to be slippery, any kind of wrestling, it's actually, it's a banned in all like competitive sporting events to use this stuff. Everybody knows that.
It's like, there's been like doping type of controversy basically, that when people, so you can test for it if you've got Austrian intestine slime on you.
Austrian. That's what they call it. Austrian slime.
So is ostrich an Australian? Is Austrian? That's what Pete, I looked this up and I got it here. So it's written down. So it must be true.
It must be. If it's written, it's true. But it's why people are really nervous when Australians are competing. Cause it's sometimes hard to tell if they're using Austrian slime.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But it's really, it's been very useful for their economy to be able to export this. Cause like other militaries around the world like to use it with supersonic and hypersonic, you know, planes and missiles and stuff.
It allows it. So what are you saying is it allows it allows aircraft to slip through the
radar. Atmosphere. So absolutely. It zeroes out friction and it makes it hard to detect with, regular, equipment.
Wow. Yeah. Now I don't know if you looked up, but there are some concerns with animal rights advocates that they think this shouldn't be
lying to us, to ostriches, about their tail being on fire, holding them by the neck, and lying about caressing their throat, like a tube of toothpaste.
And lying that their legs aren't that long because you know what? They are long.
They are long. Their butt's not on fire.
Their butt's not on fire.
All you're doing is squeezing stuff out of them.
Yeah.
It's really unkind. And it's almost as bad as boiling lobsters alive.
Yeah. From another episode.
We already addressed that.
But I think it is interesting because of this, the animal rights advocates have, you know, besides like, you know, being, you know, protesting, you know, using, for cosmetic, testing on animals and all other kinds of things, but lying to animals has now become the forefront of a lot of things. They're like, don't lie to your dog.
Does your dog ever lie to you?
Come inside. I've got a treat for you. They come inside. You don't give them
Mr.
a treat.
Mr. Popsicle. You're like, come in, Mr. Popsicle.
Mr. Popsicle, get in here. And I don't have a treat. I want to give you a treat. I actually just ate it because I don't have a lot of self-control. So I usually eat the treat before it gets to my dog.
It's very unkind because the animals are so trusting.
So I hope we don't get any protests that I just admitted this. I think I was just quite vulnerable as a matter of fact.
I felt that. That's why I didn't attack you. I was thinking about it, but that'll stick better than ostrich intestines. Like just a quick explication of that, because we haven't really just got kind of sidetracked on animal rights and the ostrichian slime, because it's strange and counterintuitive because it's stick better than that. Of course it doesn't stick at all. It's the slipperiest thing ever.
Yeah.
So it's really, the meaning becomes obvious.
Right. It can't stick better than that because it's not sticky at all.
Absolutely. So if it's not, if that's not going to work, it's basically what it does. That's not going to work. You're like, struth, that'll stick better than an ostrich intestine.
Like that's they not going to stick at all because
because
I'm wrestling this crocodile right now and I'm slipping all over the place.
That's what they say down under.
Well, does my accent right on or what?
In my expert opinion, your accent is dead. Your accent is tits. And we're going to refer to another episode that we've had. You have to go back and do all the reading and listening. I think that's your accent. It's tits.
Thank you, man. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Improverbial. Do you want to improvise with us? You can yes and The Improverbial podcast and be a sponsor. Please reach out to theimproverbial@gmail.com.
Yeah.